Broadcasting from the Hair Salon corporate offices, it's the Suzanne Benker Show, where men and women are equal in value, but wildly different by nature. Join us here every week when we challenge the culture's hugely flawed narratives regarding men, women, sex, and love. But before we do that, I have a quick favor to ask. We podcasters love nothing more than to get reviews. It totally makes our day. So I would appreciate it very much if you would pause this podcast for a hot second and write a review on whatever platform you're currently using. And if you've already done so, please consider sharing the podcast with a friend or family member you think would enjoy it. Shoot them a text or an email with a link to a specific episode you enjoyed. Word of mouth is the primary way podcasts grow. I also want to remind you that if you're looking for marriage or relationship coaching, go to SuzanneBenker.com and click on the coaching button at the top. I received an email the other day from a podcast listener who asked whether or not I do consultations, and I realized that I'm not doing a very good job of telling people where they can access that information. So again, that's SuzanneBenker.com, and there's a coaching button at the top. Finally, if you love The Suzanne Benker Show and you would like to see it remain commercial-free, don't forget to become a Patreon subscriber. Just go to thesuzannebenkershow.com and click on Become a Patron. And thank you, everyone, for your continued support. So as some of you know, I talked about having my husband Bill in studio, and we never got the opportunity, and it's finally here. So today we are going to answer questions from listeners, and my assistant Kelsey is going to mediate and ask those questions. So you'll hear from the three of us coming up next. And we have Kelsey on the line right now via Skype. Hey, Kelsey.
Hey.
And we have Bill, of course, my husband.
Hello, everybody. I'm glad to be here. Put on your seatbelts.
Okay, Kelsey, can you explain to everybody, because I'm going to sort of step back since I normally, you know, run the show here. I'm going to let you run it and tell people what we're doing and let you take over.
So everyone is very interested to know about Suzanne and Bill's marriage. You know, Suzanne, you do a lot of writing about marriage, about feminism, about families. And a lot of people would love to know what it's like to be inside your marriage. And so I've collected some questions from your listeners and readers. And these are some questions that they have about your marriage. So we can begin whenever you guys are ready.
Okay. All right. Are you ready, William?
Bring it on.
Okay.
Are you scared?
I'm ready to go.
No, we're good. We're open book. You know, we're not too private around here. So
it's
happy
hour after this anyway. So let's do it.
It is totally happy hour.
Let's do it.
It's totally happy.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about happy hour is it seems to get earlier and earlier now.
But that's
a side note.
Yeah, coronavirus has definitely done that. We cannot deny that. Yeah,
and it is 8 a.m. in the morning right now.
8 a.m.? It is not. What? No, it's not. Oh, my God. He's totally kidding. Oh, my gosh.
The first question I have for you is, how did you both meet? How did you meet?
Oh, my gosh. Bill, can you tell that story in a quick way?
Yeah, I'll try. You can yell at me if
I get it. He tends to be long-winded, so
overwinded.
Everybody forewarned here.
I went to a friend's brother's wedding, and it was at a hotel here in St. Louis, and we closed it down, and it was after midnight, and we went to a place called the Tap Room, which was inside the Cheshire Inn in those days, and went up to get beers for my friends. It was packed. The place was crazy. And we had just been there the weekend before. And in St. Louis, if you know anything about this silly town, going to whatever high school you went to is a big deal. So I knew the bartender because he knew my buddies and they all went to the same high school. And I said, hey, I'm Bill. And you remember me from last week because I had just been there. He goes, yeah, I remember you. And I go, I'm the guy that went to DeSmet. And he's like, oh, yeah. And Suzanne was at the bar and looked up at me and said, you went to DeSmet? And then that started the whole conversation. And
it was really interesting about that, I think, when I look back on that, is that, because I think this is kind of different, he hadn't seen me and I hadn't seen him. We hadn't laid eyes on each other when we actually first spoke, because I was seated at the bar and he was behind me. So I just heard this gentleman say something about something that interested me. And so I turned around to respond, but you know, he could have been a dog for all I knew. I wasn't, you know, looking to pick him up or anything. And he hadn't seen me at all. So it wasn't until I said that, you know, what you just said, that you went to Smet. And he said, yeah. And then he walks around to the front and we start talking and just never moved for 2 hours.
After I got the beers with my buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
right.
And let's make this clear. Going to the bar is not the place to pick up your future spouse. It was something that just happened. Neither of us was looking.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking either at that point. I had pretty much given up. I was like, there'd just be Uncle Bill. The heck with it. I was 33, I think, or 32, whatever it was. But yeah.
And I had just moved back from the East Coast, and I didn't know anybody here. So it was awkward for me. And it just literally was a coincidence that we both ended up there. We were not bar frequenters, at least not for the purpose of picking people up. So it was just, anyway, we just laugh because I always tell people, you're never going to find your spouse at a bar.
And then I got your number.
Yeah.
And there's more stories around that, but we won't bore everyone with that.
Yeah.
But then I did everything opposite of what I would have done. So I didn't call her until Wednesday, and then we went out Friday to dinner and a movie, and then just took off from there.
And so is the significance of that for you, because it's sort of like the opposite, like remember that Seinfeld episode? I'm going to do everything the opposite, the way that I normally do it, and see if it works out for me.
Right. I had a low excitement quotient. I mean, even though you were cute, I thought you had red hair. So I was like,
we had consumed a little bit by then, too.
But
this was 1 and 2 in the morning. You know, again, not the way to do it.
No, it's not the way to do it.
Anyway. So that's it.
So, Suzanne, you know, it's funny because you do have a 2-drink minimum for your 8 dating rule, so.
That's true.
But I'm 52 now, so I can't, you know, drink as much as I used to. That's
there was a lot
more
talking than drinking going on.
Fair enough.
So, how long after you started dating did you propose, Bill?
Let's see. When was it? It was 6 months in. Is that right? Yeah, it was November. I kind of knew that, about 3 months in, I was like, And then 6 months in, right before that, I knew it. I think at 3 months I started thinking about it, and that's not normal either. I mean, there's no way.
Well, we were 30 and 33, so you're a little faster on the, you know, than you were.
Well,
you
can tolerate. You've learned so much from dating so many people. Yeah. I think that's kind of where I was, and I wasn't expecting this. And I was like, oh, this has just ruined my life, because now I found this woman, this incredible woman who I wasn't looking for, thinking I was going to be single forever and do whatever I wanted the rest of my life, and then that changed.
Wouldn't have wanted that. That's ridiculous.
Well, I just wasn't expecting it. I wasn't looking and I wasn't expecting. Whereas before, I was looking.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
Tell me about your wedding. Where was your wedding? Was it a small wedding, a large wedding? I know, again, Suzanne has another little tidbit about not having a big, expensive wedding, so I'm curious.
Oh, yes. I have written about that. You're right. Well, because I did it one of both ways. And a lot of people who have followed my work know that I was married once before for 4 years, no kids, in my 20s. I was married at 23, divorced at 27, and then remarried at 30, for anyone who's doing the math. And then I had my 2 kids at 32 and 35. And the first time was just your regular big wedding scenario, and the second time was not. Now, it wasn't small, but it was smallish. And people loved it. It was really, really nice. It was just not traditional. We didn't have a receiving line. We got rid of a lot of, you know, have to's and just did it in a simple way.
We had 75 people. It was close, very close friends and family.
In a small, almost like a house. Anyway, so I laugh because the research has shown that the larger and more expensive the wedding, actually the more chance of divorce, believe it or not. So that was an interesting piece of research that I'd written about. So, and since that happens to follow my life, I just wrote about that
It was a celebration.
That's a good point. That's a good way of
putting
it.
That's really what it was.
That is.
Very good.
Yeah.
So let's get into the meat of this conversation. And I'm going to ask each of you the same question, but I'll ask Bill first. Okay.
Okay.
What is Suzanne's most annoying habit?
Oh, let's see.
Joey, our producer, is over here waiting on the edge of his seat to hear the answer.
I would have to say Suzanne is very quick and to a fault. And what I mean by that is she'll go to the store and she gets overwhelmed by the choices. So she sees butter and she just gets a thing of butter, not seeing that it says unsalted or that it's Pflugra or whatever it is. She just gets butter. and comes home, and you're like, that's not what I wanted. Now, that's kind of a simple, like yogurt. I mean, you go to the store now, there's so many different kinds of yogurt. It's crazy. So it's kind of like that. She just moves really fast. Even today, when we came to do this, she forgot her computer. She forgot her notes. And here we are. We're still doing it anyway. Life goes on.
Yeah, so I need to slow down. I mean, I'm always trying to slow down, actually. I have a mantra in my head about that, but I definitely do move faster than I should. And my mother used to give me trouble when she was alive about that all of the time. So it's definitely, I mean, problematic.
My nickname for her is Hummingbird. Mm. And if you ever watch, there's a PBS thing about hummingbirds and how they fly all over the place and they're just moving everywhere super fast. And they're just, the minute the sun comes up, they're on the move. And then when the sun goes down, they're out. And that's basically what Suzanne is. It's exactly who she is. So I call her my hummingbird when she's doing that. That way I don't get frustrated.
So let's go ahead, Suzanne, and you tell us what Bill's habit.
I have to say, he has very few bad habits. I mean, really, like off the charts.
You're
so
being
few.
Too nice.
No, it's true. I mean, really. But if I had to pick one over the years that used to annoy me and now I just sort of accept it. Well, I mean, I do accept it because it's not going to change. And that is that he doesn't finish something in the kitchen. Well, specifically the kitchen. I don't know if this counts for anything else. But in the kitchen, he'll do the whole, you know, dishes after dinner or whatever. But he takes it all the way up to filling the dishwasher, putting the soap in. But he doesn't start the machine ever. And he doesn't wipe down the countertops. So invariably, he doesn't finish the job. So I have to go back and make sure to remember to start the dishwasher, or I'll come down in the morning and find the dishes unwashed, which then sets off this whole train of, you know, there's a domino effect if the dishes aren't clean in the morning, because then you have to wash them, and then you have the other dishes that you're doing. So anyway, I used to get really frustrated, and now I just know to go in every night and turn on the dishwasher and wipe down the counters, and life goes on. But for a long time, that was an example of like, why would you not finish it? Like, I don't get it.
But in all honesty, in marriage, there are a lot of things like that. If you think about those things, they fester forever inside your mind. And then that gives you a reason to divorce somebody, which these things are really innocuous.
Yeah.
And they're kind of silly, because what ends up happening is you can make up for each other's
idiosyncrasies.
Yes. Like somebody, oh, I'll do that. You come along and you finish the job.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
you know.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Suzanne, would you say, you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, your partner's annoying habits. Some of them, you'll never change them. So it's probably better just to accept whatever faults you can live with, correct?
Yes, I have written about that. You're right. And I do feel very strongly about that. I think there's a lot of people. In fact, the research shows that that long married couples have the same disagreements 40 years in than they did the first year in. And those studies were proving and showing that hence, there's no point in spending all of these years arguing about something that's literally never going to change. Now, I'm sure there are habits that are bigger than what we came up with. Those two things were, as you said, were pretty innocuous.
We could be spending all that time romancing instead of doing this.
Yeah, I guess I'm talking about just the little things that throughout the day-to-day life that get on your nerves but are not, you know, deal breakers.
Yes. I think that's one thing that we've always really had in check. It's not been an issue for us. I mean, we've had problems in our marriage like anybody else, don't get me wrong. But they don't really revolve around daily upkeep or parenting. I know, you know, you wanted to ask me about about parenting too. I think you said someone asked about that.
Yeah.
That's just not a difficult area for us when it comes to, household chores, childcare, you know, all that stuff. It's just not been difficult.
We're not checking off. Oh, I did this today. Oh, what'd you do? I did this today. There's none of that going on.
None of that going on.
That's just silliness.
No. Total silliness. Yeah.
Okay. So then I'll follow the next question. Another question that we received was, what is your favorite thing about each other? So Bill and Suzanne, what are your favorite things about each other?
I love the fact that Suzanne laughs at all the stupid things I say.
Why is it, but tell people why that's so important, because you have said that a lot over the years, actually. And what is it about a woman, I think it's about this, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's just you and me, but a woman laughing or really enjoying the sense of humor.
And it's not even that, just that we do a lot of teasing and, you know, fun little innuendo things and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
it's very playful.
I think it keeps things light, and I think it creates the right kind of atmosphere. I don't know how to describe it. It diffuses a lot of things.
Did you not have that with other women, that they were light?
I did. No, I always had.
Why is that specifically about me?
Because you still laugh at the stupid things that I've been doing for the last 22 years. That's why. That's funny. Lot of repeat in there.
That's funny. I would have to say probably the same thing I've always said about him, which is that you can take Bill anywhere. I mean, he's fits in literally every scenario you can imagine. He's definitely an everyman guy. I mean, the blue collar folks love him. In fact, he works with them. He works in chemicals. He's all about the everyman, right? Yeah. And yet you could take him with the king and the queen, and he could dine there and fit in beautifully, because that's just how he is. He's had a lot of different chances to be in different environments, and he just became sort of a chameleon in that way. And so I don't know why I like that so much, but I do.
So here's another question. Who is the first to apologize after an argument?
I would have to say Bill. I think he's better at that than I am.
Why?
That's a good question, actually. That's a good question as to why. What would your assessment of me be on that, Bill, or of the situation?
I don't know. I think she has a harder time with apologizing, and I kind of accept that. There are ways that she does it that are nonverbal sometimes. So she may cuddle up to me when she knows she's done something, and then she's gotten better about it, I'd say, probably in the last 5 to 10 years in terms of saying sorry. It doesn't come up that often. So really for either of us, I think it has more to do with when we might be tired, exhausted, stressed out for whatever reason.
Right.
And
we're very much aware of what's happening with each other. We see each other a lot, by the way. This is not a marriage where we're like ships in the night by any stretch of the imagination. We both technically work from home. I now have an office outside the home, and I have for 3 years. And prior to that, I did not. And he's been home. When we were first married, he wasn't working from home, but he did several years in switch gears. And we're home-based, and we see each other a lot. And I'm very aware of when he's tired. And then the moment I pick up on that, if he didn't sleep well or whatever, I let it be. I like wait for the next day to come around. I don't bug him. I don't try to have a conversation. It's just I read him really well, and I think he does the same. And that requires being around each other a lot. You know, if you're somebody who travels a lot or you don't see each other a lot, this would be harder to do. So we'll read each other and not get into as many tiffs that would require apologizing, I think is what you meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So just off this is a question for me, actually. So I think it's kind of unusual that you both work from home. I don't think that's a typical scenario. What would you say?
Well, it has been now with coronavirus.
Yeah.
Coronavirus aside,
everyone knows what we live like now.
I have so much to say about this subject. I think it's more common today than it has ever been. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
So I think it's more common than people realize. However, I don't recommend it. I mean, I've been very upfront about this. It doesn't bother Bill at all. But I have said repeatedly and vociferously that I do not think it's good. I don't think it's a good situation. I think husbands and wives should be apart throughout the day and come together at the end of the day. I just think that's healthier. So there's no question that it has been problematic, but he will say that that's more so for me because it doesn't bother him at all. Now, some of that has to do with the fact that as a writer, what I need is utter and complete silence. I can't even have anybody in the vicinity. Whereas what he does doesn't require utter and complete silence. So I think the nature of what we do is significant here. So that's why it was probably more of a problem for me. And ever since I got the office 3 years ago, it's totally changed everything, in my opinion.
I would say that I would totally agree with that, that that made a big difference. Because I know, as you know, I've got a master's in English. Mm-hmm. I wrote poetry for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Still do occasionally. And the only way I can really do it is if I'm feeling completely alone. Because that's how I could get lost in what's going on in my head.
Yeah.
And it just makes it a lot easier. It goes faster that way. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh, it's 3 o'clock.
You got
I've been here since 9. Yeah. 6 hours later, absolutely. I got 20 pages done.
So for many years, I was trying to do what I was doing at home. Now, it ebbed and flowed. I mean, he traveled sometimes for weeks at a time. So that was great when he was gone. But it wasn't often enough and regular enough. So eventually I did get the office and it's made a huge difference. So all of which is to say we do it and we've done it, but we don't, or at least I don't recommend it.
Right. I mean, my fiance and I work from home. You know, the nature of our work is that we both work from home. And I think that it is definitely hard to navigate that. So I just find it interesting that you had a similar situation for a number of years. And I think that that's a difficult thing to navigate. That's why I'm asking.
It has been. Yeah. There is no question. I mean, sometimes I do wonder how we made it through so many years of doing it. I honestly do. I think that we're meant to say goodbye in the morning and come together in the afternoon. I want to miss him. You know, and until I went to an office, I didn't have enough, or when he was out of town, I definitely would miss him. But when he wasn't, I didn't. And I missed missing him.
And so if she was there in the house, I don't sit still. I have to, I sit and I'm on the phone, I'm on the computer. And this is
and then you'd go out
2 days
people.
Out of the week. In 3 days, I'm traveling, but I'm not, I mean, I'm going to see somebody in the morning, somebody in the afternoon, and then that's it. And I'm back home again. So there's a lot of movement, which I could understand why she would get frustrated by that. But and I can't.
That's just nature of it.
It's just what it is. I have to move around. That's who I am.
Right.
The only thing that kept it from being, you know, blowing up any worse is it was nobody's fault. Right. Nobody did anything. There was nothing to get mad about in terms of getting mad at the person. It was just the situation. And so for a long time, it was hard to make sure that we didn't have fights or anything based on that circumstance because it wasn't anybody's fault. It's just the nature of the beast.
The other thing is we discussed my having an office separate, but I felt like my job can start at 6:30 in the morning and can go into the evening if it has to at times. So it's just a lot easier if everything's at the house for me rather than having an office and I got to get in the car and go to the office and I don't want to do that. It's just that doesn't make sense.
So I went, and that's it. It's all good now.
Bill, this one's for you specifically. What do you think when Suzanne gets internet haters? And I've seen some comments, and I know at one point, she releases articles that I guess you could say trigger people occasionally. And what do you think when she gets internet haters? How do you respond to that?
So when she first started, I used to get pretty upset. 20, 25 years ago when this all began. And because I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Don't they understand, the importance of what she's saying?
Because you're not biased or anything.
They're not reading the thing. They need to read the thing, I'd get all upset about it. And now I realize that they're just getting emotional. They're emotionally reacting without really understanding what she's saying, not leaving themselves open to the thoughts and the writings that she has and the facts that she has presented. So I just kind of ignore it. All I do is say, these people don't really understand it. So,
and then I will say it hasn't been an issue in the last few. Now, there was a time when it was bad. It went on for when I wrote The War on Men, and that went viral, and I wound up on The View, and then I got a lot of hate mail from feminists. It was bad, and that was 2012, November of 2012. So here we are. 8 years later, and it's been several years since there's been any quote-unquote hate mail of any kind. So I feel like that sort of came and went, and it only happens periodically now, and he doesn't always know or see it. But back then he did. But now I just shield him. I don't even tell him sometimes. It's just not. I mean, what's the point?
No, there is no point.
So this next question is about your parenting style. Do you guys both have the same parenting style? Is one of you more strict, or were you more strict when your kids were growing up? What was that dynamic like?
I kind of wish the kids were here to answer that. They might have more objectivity. Seriously, I wonder what they would say. Although, I mean, they have talked about it over the years, so I kind of know what they would say.
I think philosophically we're on the same page, 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we're both good disciplinarians. I would say that the difference is that Suzanne and I both had very different upbringings than what our kids had. Mm. I think it's a fair statement to say that. My parents were divorced when I was 11. My dad moved out when I was 9. When I was 7, I knew something wasn't right. So my life was pretty much with my mom, you know, from 11 on. I saw my dad like once a month or twice a month for a weekend visit. But that's not parenting. So my mom was very, she led more by example. So I was able to get away with a lot of things. So I know what things kids can get away with. So I don't let them get away with it. I put it that way.
I don't know. It's just parenting has been probably our least difficult marital. I don't know of any real disagreements we've had over parenting.
There have been some little things, I guess. But not anything big. And I would say that we pretty much we discipline, but then we also want them to grow up to be their own people. So we don't hover over them.
Yeah, and we're liking that way again. So there wasn't any correcting of each other. There was not a lot of correcting of each other. Now, there's definitely, as they were getting older, there was a lot of, okay, you step in or I step in based on opposite sex, because we have a boy and a girl. And, you know, as you know, I've written, in fact, very recently about how women, moms need to step out and let the dads take over when the boy is about 11 or 12 years old. And this was something that I had to learn the hard way because I didn't have any brothers and my dad wasn't a manly man. He was more of a nerd, you know, type. When it came to dealing with opposite sex stuff that I think is really important as a you know, dad of a, let's see, how am I saying, a dad of a daughter and a mom of a son, then we'd step in and kind of do things differently based on that. But we agreed.
And we're very straight shooters. I mean, we both, we don't.
There's no eggshells.
Shelter them.
No,
yeah. We don't shelter them in any way, shape, or form. We talk straight up with them. We've always been that way.
Yeah. We believe in talking about everything. So they're probably over talk. We probably over talk. And so, they know that, yeah, they get quite the earful. They're ready to launch. They probably,
even when Henry was 12, I think he played ice hockey and we went on a trip to Chicago to a tournament and he was in the shower and wanted to know what his privates were for. Like, what's this for, Dad? So I had explained to him, you know, men and women have different things and,
You didn't say things. You told him you used the terminology.
I'm using it being delicate on the radio here.
Oh, you don't have to. We're not on the radio. You know, this is podcast. We can say whatever we want, darling.
All right. He wanted to know what his testicles were for, and I had to explain to him what they were. And I said, women have them too. They're just called ovaries on the inside of their bodies. And I had to explain to him how it all went together.
Tell him that one time when he's like, Dad, we were all in the car, right? And he's like, it's hard. Yeah. What was he saying?
He's like, Dad, it hurts. It hurts. It hurts. It's all hard, Dad. And I said, Henry, don't touch it. It'll go down.
Oh, my God.
I think it was like 4 or 5, maybe. I don't know. That's funny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he told him all about the birds and the bees and how it all happens very early on, like 10 or 11 years old. So we believe in early intervention with everything.
And just straight up.
Straight up. Yeah. Yeah, we don't sugarcoat. We don't walk on eggshells.
We didn't use, you know, this is your wee wee and this is your wah wah. Yeah, we didn't do any of that stuff.
Your what? Bill, what did you call it?
Your wee wee and your wah wah. This is the penis and this is the vagina and, you know, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
This is your arm. Right. This is your elbow.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if I've ever heard it called a wah wah before, but I'll go with it. So, okay, speaking of sex. how did you keep the spontaneity in your relationship and your marriage when your kids were very young?
When you got married, things were perfect. You were both in love and life was good. Then somewhere along the line, everything changed. She changed, or maybe he did. Either which way, now your relationship feels, well, hard. I coach husbands and wives who feel lonely, disrespected, or misunderstood in their relationship. So many women today are desperate for their husbands to step up to the plate, to make a decision and to stick to it, to lead rather than to follow. Ladies, you have the power to make it happen. Men respond best to women who are grounded in their feminine core. As for husbands, so many of them want their wives to stop nagging and to just trust them, to smile more and to complain less, to look at them the way they did when they were first dating. Men, you have the power to make it happen. Women respond best to men who are grounded in their masculine core. The secret to lasting love rests in the masculine-feminine dance. Once you master it, your relationship will no longer be difficult. You'll be moving with the biological tide rather than against it, and that makes marriage smooth sailing. If you're struggling in your relationship, if you feel frustrated or alone, I can help. Just go to SuzanneVenker.com, that's SuzanneVenker.com, and click on the coaching button at the top. Don't wait another minute to acquire the mindset you need to find love and to sustain it. It's so much easier than you think. That's SuzanneVenker.com.
How did you keep the spontaneity in your relationship and your marriage when your kids were very young?
The question is asked all wrong, Kelsey. There is no spontaneity whatsoever in one's sex life after the kids come. At least not at this stage. At least after they pass maybe the first couple of years.
Well, we were.
When they're babies and they're asleep, they don't know what's going on. But once you get past that, spontaneity is just a... It just flat out does not exist. Am I wrong?
No, I'm not. I think things were improving until the coronavirus came, because then we had Emma home with us, whereas Henry would leave and go to work. So
yes,
we would have time alone to have spontaneity, if you want to call it that.
Yes, but let's tell people what stage we're in. Our kids are 17 and 20. Mm-hmm. So one's gone, and the other one is in school all day, and he has an after-school job, and he gets himself around on his own. So all of a sudden, in the last year, for the first time in 20 years, we've had some hours in the house with ourselves only, which has not been the case for 20 years. So what he's referring to is we were just sort of getting that, experiencing that, to get a taste of that. And then all of a sudden the coronavirus hit and we're like, oh my God, we are never alone.
Everyone's
again.
Here now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So just all of which is to say the spontaneity thing, I mean, forget about it. It just, you have got to make time for each other.
You have to plan it. So it takes the spontaneity out, but too bad.
Yeah. Bingo.
You have to work
there
at
go.
It. It's not, you know.
It's just.
It's not like when you're just married and you have no kids.
No. Not,
or when they're little.
Not at all.
It's gone.
It is. And you just have to accept that and not freak out about it and just say, okay, we're gonna improvise
you
for
have
now.
To,
for
you
now.
Have to be creative.
You have to be creative. Yeah. And then they'll leave eventually and you'll get it back again. But.
Early in their marriage, when I think we had Emma, was little, and I was flying back from somewhere, and there was a Sky Mall magazine on the plane, and I was like, oh, and they had this massage table you could get, and I was like, all right, I'll buy this, and it was all wood, and it folded out, and it was all cushiony, and had a little hole in the face, and I'm like, yeah, all right, so I got that, and I think I gave it to her for, what was that, Christmas, or your birthday, or something, and she's like, oh, Bill, 'cause she loves massages, so, you know. That helped with the spontaneity.
Yeah. I got massages for about a year or two. And that damn table is folded up in the corner of our bedroom and has been there for about 15 years.
And it was cute because after Henry was born, he was a toddler kind of running around. They'd both get on the thing and go, what is this for, Mom and Dad? What is it? And they'd play around with the head thing and put their head in the hole and laugh. And
yeah, that was fun.
It was pretty funny.
Anyway, so...
I was going to ask you what your lives are like now that your kids are kind of on their own and almost out of the house, or, you know, Emma's out of the house, your daughter's out of the house, but I feel like that's a bad question in light of what's going on.
Yeah, it was.
Because now they're both, like, locked in the house with you, so.
I mean, this whole.
We can't even go on a date.
Right.
Can't do anything.
No, we can't. Yeah. So now it's really, really different. So it's hard to remember back 7 weeks ago.
But at the same time, it's as much as that can be annoying. What I'm discovering is while Suzanne is over here at her office, when I'm at home working and they're both asleep, they're staying up until all hours and sleeping late, and then they get up and do their homework. I'm in my office doing my job. And then they get up and do their homework, and they're running around, and I go downstairs and have lunch, and I come back up, and I'm in my office. So then when dinner comes, we all come together again.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of nice, because it's family time again, like when they were little. And since we haven't seen each other all day, we can talk about what's been going on. So that has been very pleasant.
Yeah,
very
we're
nice.
Playing
that's cool.
Playing more games than we, and we've always been a game family. I mean, we play games, but now it's now you really have to because you can't go anywhere. And Emma's our daughter's not going out with her friends because there's nowhere to go. And but we're very excited about being empty nesters, if that's the crux of your question. And we're looking forward to this next phase of our lives for sure.
We got 1 year left with Henry,
yeah,
and then he's off to college. So.
Yeah.
That'll change some things. That'll be good. We can take some road trips, you know, day trips to different places and go to wineries or whatever and go to some parks.
Yeah. I mean, not that we couldn't do that now, but it just feels different.
The weight is different.
The weight,
you know.
It's off of you completely. You don't think about what's at home needing you or whatever. Or who's at home, not what's at home.
So another question from one of your listeners is, how do you divide or do you divide your household chores?
I think for a long time it was, you know, I've written about this, that it just, I think the problem with the household chores, honestly, I believe that comes into play or has come into play when women started going to work full time in addition to having children. I think that's when the fights sort of began about what happens at home, because invariably she's got a double load and the husband is not going to do it the way that she wants him to do it, or he's not going to take on as much as she is when she's home for various reasons. And this gets to be a problem where you're like starting to play tit for tat. Well, since I was always home and have been since I was pregnant with my first, I've always, it was just a given that I was doing the bulk of the work on the home front and that he was outside making a living. That I will say that that makes it very easy, I think it's easy, to not have those fights or disagreements, because that's part of the deal when you choose to have a setup like that, right? So I don't remember... I can't remember ever really playing tit for tat or like thinking like in terms of...
We've always shared chores. I mean, so I was brought up in a house where I had chores. And so when you do that, you do your own laundry, you're doing the dishes, you make dinner.
Right.
I learned how to do all those things. Plus, I lived alone for, from 18 to 32 or 33 or whatever it was when we got married. So... I already was equipped.
He was very
to do
self-sufficient.
Some things.
When
I could
I met
make
him.
Meals.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I had her to my apartment for dinner, I made lamb chops. I grilled lamb chops, and
your apartment was very clean. But I think you just set it up that way.
No, it was clean. it was clean.
I'm just kidding.
when she wrote the first book, Emma was still little.
Yeah.
So what would happen is. She would make the dinner, but then I would clean everything up, give Emma the bath, and then read to her and put her to bed, and she could write then. So we did
so
that.
That went
on
for
six months.
Yeah. Where he was just... Wow. Now, I was with her all day, and then he took over for that short period of time, and she had an early bedtime. But it was still helpful.
It was a great time. Yeah. I think that may have been when she wanted to push you. Remember how she would... It was Saturday morning. She would make pancakes, and Suzanne would make the pancakes, and I'd sit in the couch with Emma in her onesies, and we'd watch whatever show she wanted to watch. And when Suzanne came in the room, Emma would get all upset. It was before she could even talk. She'd she put her hand out and look away.
To
go away. And then at first, Suzanne thought it was funny, and then she's like, this just isn't right.
Oh my gosh, so funny.
But she was into daddy at that point.
Yeah, she was.
That wasn't forever.
No.
It was fun though. But yeah, we just share the duties. I mean, you know, like if I see that laundry needs to be done and I'm at home and it's Monday and I'm doing conference calls, I'll throw the laundry in.
Yeah.
Because it takes nothing to get on the conference call for an hour, hour and a half, then come back downstairs, had some almonds and then throw the laundry, you know, over into the next load.
It doesn't take
2 seconds.
So, but that's an advantage of working from home too. There's that. Like, if you're somebody who's gone 8 or 10 hours a day, you're not going to have that advantage. But yeah, it's just not. That just hasn't caused a lot of problems for us.
So, on a more serious note, who manages the money in your marriage?
So the short answer is we both do.
Yeah.
We both do. If you're asking who physically pays the bills and oversees it's Bill.
I oversee it, but we talk about it all the time.
We do, and we are on a budget. and we communicate regularly. And I think you know that I've written extensively, well, maybe not extensively, but enough about the fact that it bothers me that people talk about his money and her money when they're married, because there is no such thing.
No.
It is one pot of money. You are married, and that's the whole point. And there's no question that money is the number one source of conflict in marriages. And if you're not on the same page and you don't view it as a team, then that's where the problems, a lot of the problems arise.
Right.
So we've, you know, neither one of us spends any kind of money of any major, obviously petty cash on a daily basis, but, you know, I would never buy
big
something, you know, that costs anything significant without discussing it, and vice versa.
Right.
So right. it's just very much a team effort.
No, and I know even in my parents' marriage that my father controlled all the money. My mom had no clue what they had. So, I don't understand that. So it just doesn't compete with me, because it doesn't make any sense. We're in it together. You know, we have bills to pay, we have a household to run, and we're doing it together. So I can't imagine it. It just creates too much tension, in my opinion, to sit there and make it into like, this is my pile and that's your pile, and you handle your pile and I'll handle my pile. That just doesn't, it's craziness. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I know people do it. Separate checking accounts, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Now, I suppose it doesn't matter. I mean, you can do what you want, obviously, but, you know, as long as it's all joint, you know, everybody's names is on everything and everybody can get their hands on everything. If you have your own separate accounts just for convenience sake, as long as everybody knows what's going on
right.
and has access to it, you know, that's really my issue. It's not really the details of how you do it.
We only have two more questions. And one, again, I'm just adding a quick one about the money. Is between the two of you, what advice would you give to, you know, newly married couples that are starting their marriage, trying to get a handle on their finances? Do you have any advice on how to not make that a source of conflict? You would say it would just be making sure that you're both on the same page and making sure everything is joint? Or do you have anything else?
Well, I think it's important to understand that what you're, you know, what one person's bringing into the marriage, the other person's taking on. So if somebody has debt, for example, that becomes family debt. That's, you know, when you marry the person, you're taking on whatever they've brought to the table. So you have to know that in advance. That doesn't become something that's his or hers.
You're
it's
married.
Now ours. You're married.
You're married.
You're married. So I guess there's that. You know, if you're getting married later in life and people have children by another marriage, I mean, you have to understand that you're taking that on. You cannot separate that out from this new life you're going to create, like it's going to be a clean slate. You know, again, it's one pot, it's a marriage. And so that gets complicated, and you have to understand that you're taking that on in a situation like that. That's a very specific situation, but
I think you also have to learn to say no to each other. So what I mean by that is one of you really, what, somebody wants a 65-inch screen TV and it's $2,000. And the other one wants a giant couch that's $2,000. And you have to talk about that. And then you also have debt. So you're like, well, what do we do here? So I would say to young couples, you're in this forever. You're going to be married for as long as you're alive, till death do you part. So that's a lot of time. And there's a lot of change. And if you're patient, things will work out in the right direction, but you have to think long term. It's like the stock market. You can't get freaked out when the stock market collapses for 1 year, because in 10 years it could be three times what it was. So it's that kind of a philosophy that if you just
definitely a lot,
focus on the money and what you're spending and how to control it, you'll be okay. The less debt you have, the better it is. I mean, that's all I'll just say. The more you get rid of that debt, the simpler your life becomes and you're more in control of it. The finance part. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, no, I would. It's just I'm thinking about people listening to this and going, well, everybody's got debt when they're starting out, so I don't want them to think that.
But you can't panic about it, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah,
don't
but
think
I don't.
You're always going to be under it forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's the underlying thing that causes problems for people when they're first married. I really don't. I mean, yes, you have the debt, but I think the conflicts, at least that I see, have to do with
who's spending what.
Yeah. It's very hard to get used to that when you're used to being on your own. That's why I say, you know, you really have to have a whole new system of understanding that it's now ours. And if you're open and communicating and you're not hiding anything, you're going to be okay. It's when you get into those, again, his and hers, or hiding money, or using it against the other person in some way. You know, if you make more than the other person and you want to control it, I mean, that's really where the problems come in.
Well, what we did, I mean, earlier in our marriage, too, we did a lot with hand-me-downs and...
Yeah, we did.
You know.
Mm-hmm. A lot of secondhand stores.
Yeah, secondhand stores.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Your mother's friends passing away. Oh, we got some lamps or we got furniture. Yeah. And, you know, it was just...
Well, I don't know what got with furniture.
Some of it was pretty good, though. Seriously.
But definitely secondhand clothing stores. And I lived at Target for years when my kids were little. And what I didn't get into actual brand name clothing, I don't think, until they were older, much older. So stuff like that. You just make do, you know. And I think that's hard for people who are used to having... I think that's a good thing about the coronavirus, actually. I think it's forced people to really live and make do with what they have.
It's making them slow down, too.
And yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you definitely have to make do with what's available, and you definitely have to take stock of your household and all of those things. So it's been, it might have had some positive aspects
definitely.
To it. So
I definitely think so.
The final question, and I think it's a really great question. Here it is. If you had to pick just one thing that makes your marriage work, despite having problems like everyone else, what would it be for each of you?
So I don't, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but I truly, truly believe that it is our view of marriage as being a team effort. It packages the way you think about marriage and then all of the things that go along with being married. You're always thinking about it in terms of what's best for the team. And I don't know, I just can't stress that enough. I just feel like I never think in terms of me, and he never thinks in terms of him. It's always the four of us, you know, this unit. And you'd be surprised at how just that mental shift frames things in such a way that you handle them differently, I think. I don't know. What do you think, though?
Well, I think to go back to when I first met Suzanne, the things that clicked for me, which is kind of funny because even my brother Paul said this to me when I was in high school. There's love is not everything. So you and I always say this, you can fall in love with just about anybody, but the question is, are they the right person for you? And that is a hard thing to understand for some people. And what it comes down to is it isn't always about the love. It's about what's your life philosophy? How do you view money? Where do you want to live? How do you want to raise your kids? Are you going to send them to public school or private school? Are you going to send them to a Christian school? Are you going to send them to a Jewish school? Are you going to, all these things add up. And if you have these things in place that are non-negotiables, that are breakables, because if you're not on the same page, they can really mess you up.
Yeah.
If there's something that's very important to you. I think that there's some things that, you know, we weren't on completely the same page on things, but we grew towards that on some areas. So, and that's an individual thing, I think, within a relationship. But those things are just, you have got to consider those things. Because if you don't, it's going to be a lot harder.
Yeah. The love is not going to get you through all
It doesn't solve everything.
No, it's just not enough.
I tried to describe it this way. Is all the things I just described are the everything that's under the ground. And the love is the part that grows. And you have to work out all those things below the ground first, between the two of you, before the flowers and the grass starts to grow on top, which is where the love is.
Yeah, that's my poet husband there, Kelsey.
That was a great ending, actually. Really super inspiring, and I think your listeners are really gonna enjoy this, because usually it's Suzanne, you know, talking to an expert in whatever field or, you know, in whatever subject. And this has been super refreshing. And I think the listeners will really enjoy this bird's eye view into your marriage. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, I hope so.
Hopefully they had some fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely.
Thanks for doing this, Kelsey.
Yeah. Thank you. Definitely different.
You're
for
so
me.
Welcome.
Okay. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Oh, Suzy Q. Oh, Suzy Q. Oh, Suzy Q, baby, I love you.
And that ends this hour of the Suzanne Benker Show. Don't forget to tune in next week when I speak with Stephen Baskerville, author of the book Taken into Custody and expert on family law and displaced fathers. And don't forget to recommend this podcast to one friend you think would enjoy it and to leave us a review on whatever platform you're now using. Finally, if you have a question or a comment for me, you can email me at Suzanne@thesuzannebenkershow.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great week.